Okay, everybody. Back with the hot talk.
Is this thing on? Are you receiving me?
It's on, man.
Hey, we're live.
Who are you, man?
I'm Chris Kreitz.
What do you do?
Well, primarily, I paint mugshots on paper bags, but I paint all sorts of other stuff as well. I'm an artist, professional artist here in Seattle. Yeah.
What does that mean, professional?
Art is my full-time job.
Yes.
That is what I do. I will not lie and say I support myself on that. No, fortunately, my wife has a real job to pay the bills. But no, it's working. I quit my day job in 2005, and I've been a full-time artist ever since. And I've been painting for... I've been doing the mugshots on bags since 1999, but I throw all sorts of other stuff in there. I've had a couple shows of full-scale firearms painted in bright colors on bags. I just... thought it would be funny to see what a pink Uzi looked like. So that's how that started. Painted people's portraits. I do all sorts of commissions.
You've done my portrait.
I have done your portrait. Yeah, I did the original Three Members of Smile Brigade.
Yeah.
It's inside your album cover.
It was going to be on the cover, but I've...
Well, it's inside.
It's great.
It's
yeah.
been there.
And if you go like... If you can find that thing online. But whatever, it was great. And I appreciate you doing that.
Yeah,
I think it was for a discounted price. And I hope you didn't... You know, you don't feel like we ripped you off or anything.
No, I mean, I had to eat ramen for about 2 months, but it was all right. You know, I'm a big ramen fan. No.
You know, you say you don't support yourself necessarily because you have a wife who also kicks in. But I'll tell you, if you didn't have a wife and you were willing to, like, live with some roomies, you would full on support yourself.
Probably, yes.
You're trying to maintain probably some lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, it's knock on some wood, but this year has been really... really quite good, actually. So, and I know other artists that do it. I mean, a lot of them have either a part-time job or they just live really frugally.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's doable, but it's a lot of work. And that's what people need to realize. You know, I mean, the business side of it takes at least 50% or more of your time. You're not just making art. You got to be hustling it too.
Yeah.
And so it is about who you know. So it's, you know, get out there and meet people and talk to people.
Yeah.
It's doable.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah,
now, do you ever think about, like, okay, so 50% of the time you're doing art, you're making the art, 50% of the time you're marketing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What if you hired somebody to market you, did 100% of your time with art, could you think, like, you could increase your output to make money to pay somebody, and then you could just focus on your art? Is that ever in the cards? Like, could you hire somebody to do the business side of it? Would you ever want to do that? Could somebody do it to your specification?
Well, you know, that's actually, I hadn't thought about that. That's a good point. I mean, a lot of people do that when, you know, people get to a certain level. Yeah, they just hire people to even create the art for them. Like, well, I'm not going to mention any names, but no, it happens. I don't know.
Or no, I'm sorry.
I enjoy it. I enjoy, you know, the communication and talking to people.
Okay.
and working. At some point, no, it'd be nice just to focus on the art, but I guess I'm not quite there yet. And currently, I have a gallery in San Francisco, and I just got picked up by G. Gibson Gallery in Pioneer Square. So they're kind of doing that work for me in those cities.
Oh, okay.
You know,
okay.
But there's still a lot of communication and just dealing with stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. And it allows you the personal touch.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And also having those other things to do, like running around, doing errands or whatever. It's nice because it gets me out of the house. My studio is in my house, and sometimes I won't even go past the mailbox in a week, you know, and that gets a little weird. So I like to get out and about. And heck, the motorcycle helps with that. You know, any excuse to go for a ride, it's nice.
You ride a motorcycle?
I do. I've only ridden for 3 years, so I'm still a newbie.
That's badass, man.
Well, thanks.
What'd you say?
I am badass.
Yeah, absolutely. I only have badasses on the shit show with J-Bo.
There you go.
By the way. So yeah, I knew that. But, say, okay, you ride a motorcycle. You have a history with, like, kind of a high threshold for being excited about things, like a thrill-seeking gene, that type of thing. When you were a teenager, did you like to fuck shit up? I mean, I'm just curious because it seems like a certain type of person would want to ride a motorcycle. Because it's pretty dangerous. I mean,
yeah.
The thing is, it's amazing. I'm guessing you can probably get out of sticky situations quickly because you're so small and mobile. But if you go down, you're fucked.
Pretty much. As a teenager, I did like to blow up and burn stuff, unfortunately. But hey, I have all my fingers and toes. And
put that mic a little bit closer to your mouth, if you wouldn't mind. Sure. If you wouldn't mind.
And you know, I commuted downtown on bicycle for years, so I know what it's like to play in traffic, and also I know what it's like to have that thrill of, you know, flying down Pine Street
on a bike.
But when someone makes a left turn in front of you because they don't see you, it's a bad day, because, you know, gravity always wins. And
have you ever had any close calls with it?
Yeah, I actually, I went down on my bicycle one time because someone made a left turn in front of me. I laid down. I had an SV650 for a while. Awesome motorcycle, Suzuki. Those things are great. And again, I was making a left, and I learned this: you never make a left turn on a motorcycle. You're a sitting duck.
And never.
It's just bad news.
Well, we should just learn how to always, if possible, make the right and go around or something?
Yeah, plan your route and just make a right.
That's really smart.
I mean, there's always times when you can make a left, but think about it. You know, if you're just sitting there, it's just awkward. But no, one time I was making a left in Port Townsend, and this person was like going, and they saw me, and they stopped, and then they went, and they stopped. And I was already kind of mid-turn in the intersection, and I just laid it down. I couldn't. Like, I got to that point, that angle, where it was just heavy enough that I couldn't hold it up anymore, and I dropped it. That sucked. I've never crashed while riding, but I have set the motorcycle down twice, and that was unfortunate. But hey, it still lived.
When you set the motorcycle down, does it will it fuck your motorcycle up?
Yeah, well, it busted the clutch lever about an inch off the clutch lever, and it also bent in the shifter. But fortunately, the mechanic, and it actually busted some fuse so it wouldn't start again, but the tow truck driver used to be a motorcycle mechanic, and he jerry-rigged it with a paper clip and then bent the gear shifter back, and I was able to ride home. So it saved me from having probably like a $300 tow job from Port Townsend to Seattle, so that was fortunate.
You rode home?
Yeah.
From Port Townsend?
Yep.
Port Townsend's interesting. It's interesting town.
It really is. I mean, it's in going up to Fort Worden. That's great. Like walking around there, checking out the old military base.
I don't think I've done that.
You should. It's awesome. I spent a week out there with Artist Trust for their Edge program, probably in 2007, and that was wonderful because it's an old military base, World War II. So it's got all those old bunkers and concrete like gun turrets and things. And you can walk around in there, and people I think go out there and record music in there because it's really unusual sound, like an echoes, and then you just, you know, up on a cliff, and there's a beach down below, and watching the sunset over the sound there, it's amazing.
I did a show a couple months ago in Port Townsend with Chad Channing's band. Chad Channing, original drummer of Nirvana.
Oh wow!
We went up there and kind of did a Smile Brigade did a CD release show for those guys, you know.
That's pretty fun.
Somebody keeps calling, man. But I'm not taking calls right now, so so they can just stop. I'm sorry,
They're
man.
They're calling in to yell at us.
If you're listening, I'm trying to get down with Chris here. And call me. I'll you know, if you want, when I'm done, if you're listening. Call back later.
Please.
Yeah. Please, yeah.
We'd love to talk to you, but we're kind of busy.
Well, you know what it is I'm not... I mean, I have to, like, do a bunch of shit up here to take a call. Like, I can't just, like, push a button and say hello.
Sure.
Whatever.
We've got no one operating the switchboard. It's just us.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be great to have a producer? Jesus. Port Townsend. Anyway, yeah, I went there and had a great time, you know, and it's beautifully historic. But then one time I actually got arrested in Port Townsend.
No fooling.
About a year ago. Because I didn't have a license and I didn't know it. It had been suspended. Something in California had happened many years prior, and he arrested me. And he didn't take me to jail, but like I was detained in the back of the car, and I couldn't drive home. So I had to go back to court for Port Townsend, and I got off on it because I got my license all straightened out, and it was fine.
Wild.
But the dichotomy with Port Townsend is there is that beautiful little part, and it's very historic and nice looking. But sitting in that courtroom and watching the television of the inmates trying to plead their case, I mean, these were like stalkers, a lot of meth heads, of fucked up people around there. I have the idea that drugs may be really prevalent in that area.
Quite possibly. I think, all over Washington, but you just don't really notice it until you're sitting in court.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm glad I'm not a part of that scene. But yeah. Port Townsend is cool, and Port Angeles and all that whole area is really nice. So Chris, you paint on bags. I'm really curious how you got started on this idea. Do you remember the initial moment when you said, this is what I'm going to do? That's how all great ideas seem to start. Do you remember that moment? Or how did it evolve, man?
Yeah, well, I'd been working on bags in college doing like life drawings and things just because I had it around and I liked the tooth to it and just the folds.
Okay.
And so I'd done, you know, chalk drawings and things on it and really liked just the way it looked. But it was 1999. We were living in Phoenix, Arizona at the time, and I tore up a lunch bag one afternoon and I was drinking tequila and I just quickly drew out four mugshots with a bamboo pen, really rough, and then painted them five colors each. And I was like, shit, wow, this is it. And
something about the brown of the bag with the bright colors worked?
Yeah, they really leap off the page, more so than like a white canvas or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It really has a different effect, and it just really appealed to me. I liked it. So I still have those first four on my studio wall, and then a couple years later,
you hand drew these?
Yes, yeah.
Because I know a lot of your work seems to be from photographs.
Yes.
And I don't know if you want to go into the process. I'm not exactly sure. I think you told me once roughly, but you actually also will draw occasionally.
Yeah. Well, I'll draw in a sketchbook or just goof around.
Okay.
But the paintings, yeah, they're all based on photographs. And again, primarily my work is based on mugshots from the 1890s to 1950s. And I actually transfer them now with put graphite in the back of a printout and we'll draw the outline just to give me my basic shapes and then paint five colors one at a time independently. There's no underpainting or overpainting. I work from dark to light to build out my image. Yeah, I used to use the grid method for transferring, but just took a lot longer. And I used to, even before that, I freehanded them all and it just took forever. So I was
looking at
some time saving techniques and it works and it still looks even sharper. So it works for me.
They look great. Yeah. I'm sorry. So you initially painted the four faces and colored them in, and that was, you thought it looked amazing. You thought it leapt off the page. How did you go from that into the inmates? I really love the concept of bringing these old inmate photos to life. Using wild colors.
And they're anonymous, again, anonymous from the 1890s to 1950s, and they're kind of just discarded people.
You said they're anonymous?
Yeah. I have done like Frank Sinatra's mugshot, but for my mother-in-law. I tend to keep it, just random people that I find that I like the mugshot of, not anybody associated with any famous crime or anything like that. I just like keeping them anonymous. Yeah,
that's interesting. Kind of like discarded people,
and they're on a discarded item, so it's kind of recycling both the imagery and the materials. It just has a nice aesthetic to it, I guess.
Bringing something to life, yeah, like
back to life, yeah,
back to life. I think of that occasionally. We're all enjoying our 15 minutes of fame now, or something with Facebook, and we all like everything's recorded. Every person has their little niche, but throughout
history, public.
What's that?
We live in public.
Yeah. We do live in public, but there was a time, and what I mean by a time, all times before this time, where people were obscure, terrible things, great things, everything you can imagine happened to these people, and they will never, ever be remembered. It's interesting to me how many horrible things are great happen to folks, but they will never be cataloged. And that's interesting. You're taking some of that and giving it, I don't know.
Well, because it's, again, I'm fascinated by history and I don't know what these people's stories are, but you can like just look at their expressions on their faces and some of them appear very guilty. Some of them just feel like they don't give a fuck. And some of them are just kind of like, ooh, deer in the headlights, you know, like, don't tell my mom.
Really?
So I'm just really wondering, I'm just so curious about these people. And another fascinating thing about this is some of the time periods, you know, especially if it was during the Depression or, you know, 20s, 30s, whenever it was, this might have been the only photograph of that person ever had. And it was taken by by an amateur police photographer. So some of the pictures are horrible. Or there's these two books by Peter Doyle from Australia, Crooks Like Us and City of Shadows. And I started a print now, so they're going for a lot of money, but you can actually get City of Shadows. It got reissued in Australia. Anyways, a bunch of his, you could tell they're experienced because they blink or they shake their face just a little bit to blur it. And it looks deliberate because they'll be, you know, like a front view and a side view, and you'll see them blink at the right moment to mess up kind of the shot of their face. And it's just really curious.
And, like, and what, okay, so why would you mess up? I mean, is it so you can't be identified or something?
Possibly, yeah. Or just, yeah, I don't know.
Or just another way to fuck with society.
Exactly. Like, screw you, police officer. I'm not keeping my eyes open. And actually, one of them is hilarious. It just hand scratched on the negative. It says, this man refused to open his eyes. And he's kind of smiling and his eyes are like squeezed shut. It's just, yeah. And other ones, you'll see the police officers actually holding the person up. You know, because they're really not cooperating.
Holding, just, Jesus.
Yeah, you just don't know. Is it,
have you done portraits of that, of a policeman holding?
I haven't, actually. I have done a couple of police officers. And then did a
I'm sorry, you were talking about another book of something you've seen.
Okay. I should do that. That'd be a good painting of the two cops holding that person up, because it's kind of wild. Yeah, you can kind of see a struggle.
And you do commissioned work if somebody requests, oh, I'd like to have this done.
Yeah, I like the challenge of that, because it's something I wouldn't normally paint. So, you know, somebody had me paint their three cats, and that was pretty wild because I love cats, and I was kind of like, whoa, I hadn't really thought about painting a cat. So, yeah, painting it, I'll do it.
Now, when you do that, do you do that in the same manner in which you do the mug shots? You will take a photograph and work from that?
Absolutely.
I guess that's the only way. You couldn't have three cats posed, so never mind. Really stupid question.
No, it's fine. I was asked to do a painting from life of somebody, Edward Caspell from the Legendary Pink Dots, and I just couldn't handle it. I was kind of like, well, that's not how I work. I mean, it takes me, you know, several days to do a painting, if not a week, and depending on the size. So I wasn't about to try to sit down with somebody and paint them from life. So I was like, well, I can get a photo, but I'm not going to do it from life. So yeah, commissions, I work the same exact way. Yeah, same technique.
I think, am I imagining it? Or is it wishful thinking that you did Emilio Estevez from Repo Man, Otto?
I did, actually. I did Otto from Repo Man. Yeah, and then the guy made a t-shirt out of it.
Oh, that's okay. That's where I've seen
it. But no, yeah, I did it.
Do you still have that one?
No.
So you sold that for somebody? Or you sold that to somebody?
I did sell that to somebody, yeah.
Oh, okay. That was commission? Or?
No, I just did it for, I did a series of 80s stuff one time. I had a show at
20. Pee Wee Herman, I think you did?
Yes, I had Pee Wee Herman, Mr. T. I took a bunch of senior portraits from my brother's yearbook from the 80s, just because they had, like, you know, mullets and funny hair. And I actually reversed those to try to keep it, I don't know, I didn't use their names or anything, but tried to keep it a little more anonymous. But I did a whole series, and that Otto was part of that, the 80s series.
Otto, man, my dad wanted to make sure that I learned about punk rock as he saw it. Not that he was a huge punk rock fan, I don't know. But I know that he loved that movie, and he impressed Repo Man upon me at probably the age of eight or nine.
That is crazy. Yeah, and that was like one of those films that we watched that my parents didn't really want us to watch, but it was so good.
It's great.
It's a classic.
And it holds up. It's super quotable.
Yep.
You know, it's unfortunate that Emilio Estevez became... So, like, I don't know. I don't know him personally, and whatever. He was such a badass in that role. But the last 10 years, 20 years, whatever it was, he's done Mighty Ducks. He's directed something about Bobby Kennedy. He's gotten soft. And I've seen him in interviews with his father, and he's very much like very shy and meek. And I'm like, dude, you are fucking Otto. And Repo Man. What the fuck happened?
Exactly.
I feel the same way about Matthew Broderick.
He wasn't really badass. I mean, he was Ferris Bueller, but...
Okay, you know, Ferris Bueller was badass, though.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know...
You can't compare that to Otto from Repo Man, but...
You're right, but it seems...
they're both very good movies in their own right. Yeah, and...
But he went the other direction. He didn't keep up with the badass rep. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he was...
Or did he?
Even when he was in that movie Glory about the Civil War...
Who was?
Broderick? Broderick, yeah.
I didn't see
like kind of, I mean, it was a good movie, but he was pretty much a weenie.
Right, and then movie Election, he's like the pervert teacher where he got
so good.
He was great in it, but yeah.
But he's still just kind of a lame ass, and yeah.
Yeah, I think they should have went with it.
Pays for it.
Yeah. Maybe they're like, we can't have this badass persona, we got to go the other way.
Yeah. Kinder, softer Emilio.
Ghostbusters? I think I told you this, or you did it. I've known you for a long time, and I can't remember what's fact or fiction, but you did...
make it up as you go along.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted you to do, rather, like Murray, Aykroyd, and Ramis, and Winston Zeddemore, even. I wanted the original Trinity, the original three Ghostbusters in the movie.
Yeah, no, I never did that.
You ever thought about that?
No, I would love to do some Bill Murray's, but there's a guy in L.A. who did a whole series of Bill Murray, and so like I was just about to start doing it, and then I saw his, and I'm like, you know.
Well, he just painted a bunch of Bill Murray stuff.
Who did?
The guy in L.A.?
So, yeah, that was a couple of years ago, but it just because he did it, I was kind of like, well, I'm not going to do it right now, yeah. But eventually I will, because I'd love to do like a Steve Zissou painting.
Oh, are you a fan of that movie?
I am a big fan of those movies, Royal Tenenbaums and Life Aquatic.
I couldn't get into Life Aquatic, man.
You know, the first time I saw it, I really didn't like it. But then I watched it again, and I was like, okay, no, it's got so many great parts.
Yeah, it seems like really that's that type of movie, yeah.
Yeah, so. I'm a sucker for movies. I watch way too many movies. I mean, one thing I do is, you know, I love music, but there's only so much music I can stand when I'm sitting painting all day, every day. So I'll have Netflix playing movies or TV series while I'm working, so it's not like I really watch them, but they're on. Or I'll just grab articles off the web and actually convert it to text and have my computer read it to me. Because sometimes I'm just not in the mood for music when I'm working.
You can do that?
Yeah. Text edit. Just copy the text off a web page and paste it into an editor and select all and text to speech.
It'll read to you.
Yeah. It's a little annoying with the computer voice and they screw up pronunciation and pacing, but it works. I got used to it.
It'd be cool if you could like pick the type of voice.
Oh, you can. There's different voices and you can kind of mess with it, but I didn't want to go all crazy, so it's just the computer.
What different kind of voices are on that?
There's like a few different female voices and a few different male voices. There's probably like six, I think.
Are there accents?
I don't believe so.
I'd like a nice like female English accent.
Yeah, I don't know if they do the English accent or not. That'd be kind of cool, though.
Yeah.
Or if you could record some voice and have it kind of imitate that. That'd be fun.
That'd be great. Yeah, your own voice.
Have William Shatner and Sean Connery reading you the news.
Dude, that'd be great. You were talking about, said you wanted to do some podcast sometime where you just read the news. I thought that was kind of an interesting idea.
I want to have a podcast called News or Not. And so I'm copywriting this right now in case you're thinking of stealing my idea. But no, I'd just be reading news articles and probably no commentary. Just putting on the radio announcer voice and reading a story.
You know, it's really interesting. And I won't rip off your idea. I have my own thing going. But I've wanted to do news stories here, but I don't feel like I'm
a journalist.
A journalist, or up to date enough to really speak intelligently about it. But I didn't want to read it either. But to just read it would probably be the best idea, actually.
Well, it'd be funny. I'd just like say what the website was that it came from, the date, and just read it,
yeah.
And that would be it. And then just move on to the next one. It's kind of rapid fire.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't really practiced it.
Would they be current events?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm a nut for current events, and I look at the news every day at lunch and pretty obsessively, and my wife tells me I should look at something else. But there's just so much crazy shit going on, you know, and throughout the whole Arab Spring, I guess I probably got obsessed about the news pretty much after 9/11 and just kind of pay attention to what's going on. And then just look at the last 10 years.
Yes.
What's gone on? And that's
look at the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. <You know? laughs> It just doesn't stop.
I was telling my girlfriend last night that, I believe I've become politically aware in the past maybe 5 or 6 years or something. And I start to see, once that happens, you start to see why certain people say certain things, where it's coming from. And it gives you a whole nother in-depth. I mean, a lot of people might just read an article, and because it's an article on the internet or in a newspaper, they might be like, oh, this is exactly how it is.
Yeah.
In real life, the people writing it will have a really hardcore agenda, and you start seeing the nuances, and it just drives you nuts.
Because
you're like, that's fucking bullshit. Like, that's why they're saying that. I can't believe it. I know, and it's just for a vote or something like that. And it's crazy.
Well, you hear people repeat it too. So you just,
they repeat bullshit.
You see the brainwashing going on.
And oh my God. And when media is in with the politicians, then it gets particularly bad. So it's like, you aren't doing your fucking job.
Yeah.
As media, as an objective entity, you know?
Yeah. No, there's no objectivity, it seems. Everything's been corrupted. Even truth itself, it seems, has been corrupted at this point.
Right. Perception is reality, I guess. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy world.
It's crazy, man. You're a gardener?
I am.
Chris?
Yeah, actually I am.
That's an amazing thing. the dream of the 1890s is alive and well here in Seattle. No, that's what's that show? Portlandia.
Oh, yeah.
There was the dream of the 90s where young people go to retire, all these grunge people going to Portland recently. But then they said, Dream of the 1890s, where everybody grows their own food. It was a funny thing. Tell me a little bit about that, Chris.
Yeah, no, I've been
gardening culture,
growing vegetables for years. And you know, a couple of years I didn't do it, but now we got a small yard. But I grew potatoes in buckets. I grew radishes, tomatoes, garlic, peas, beans, two different types of beans, two different types of peas. Already said garlic. What else do I got out there? Squash, cucumbers. But now I'm a Seattle Tilt certified master composter soil builder. And so I've even got a worm bin.
One more time, a little slower with what you are.
Seattle Tilt certified master composter and soil builder. So I know how to break stuff down and make good soil out of it.
And how'd you how was that title bestowed upon you?
They had a class. They have our class every year on that. And okay. I just heard about it. And I'm like, hey, this sounds really interesting. So I signed up and did that. And it was a lot of fun. Yeah, it's great. And yeah, just there's nothing quite like, you know, pulling a tomato off your own vine and eating it. And yeah it's just so great. It's so fun. I got lettuce and spinach and chard, beets, kale. I've been growing tons. I think I had like 36 varieties of food last year. I didn't even count this year. I just kind of went at it a little anarchy style this year and just started. Well, I had a bunch of seeds that I thought were expiring. They were like really old. So I just planted them all and pretty much everything came up. So it's a giant mess.
You plant them. You don't just scatter them about, do you?
No.
You put them down.
I still make rows, but I don't thin things out. So I don't really do it properly, but it works.
And that's amazing. Delicious. Like you're playing God. You're just creating things. And
well, it's amazing. I mean, it's so fun to watch something grow from a tiny seed into, you know, this big ass mm-hmm. poppy or just, you know, tomato plant that goes nuts. I mean, I probably had over 20 pounds of tomatoes last year.
Yeah.
I mean, it was nuts. Yeah. I mean,
giving them away.
No, actually, I love tomatoes. So
what do you do with the tomatoes?
Sauces or just eat
them. Oh, sauces. Yeah. Okay.
I have like a tofu or tempeh tomato lettuce sandwich every day for breakfast.
Really?
Yeah.
You put an egg on there ever?
No, I'm a vegetarian. Yeah, I don't
like
eggs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay. Cool.
I'll eat eggs like in something if it's baked in. I kind of miss eggs. If I have my own chickens, I'd probably eat eggs, but I'm not. Yeah, no, I don't eat eggs.
How old are you, Chris?
I'm 41.
41. You seem quite in shape, man.
Yeah, I try to. I TRX a lot, and I run, so. I was at TRX this morning. I didn't have time, though. I took my wife to the Bolt because she's going to Portland, and had to get ready for the show.
Big show.
No, I'm the artist in residence at Pratt this month. So Pratt here in Seattle.
Well, real quick. I just wanted the reason why I said that, because vegetarianism seems like it leads to very healthful, trim looking people. Paul McCartney, vegetarian. I've been thinking about it lately. Vegetarian.
Oh, Linda, she had a cookbook. We have that cookbook. Linda McCartney cookbook.
Oh, is it vegetarian?
Yeah, before she died.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's good.
He's 72, looking really good. Do you feel like the vegetarian lifestyle is a healthier one?
I think so.
If you do it right?
Yeah, I mean, there's good stuff in fish, but then again, I don't know. With all the Fukushima radiation, I wouldn't trust fish anymore. I love salmon, but I just don't. I just prefer not to eat it.
I saw this really scary article that we all here, even now, are somewhat contaminated.
Oh, absolutely.
With radiation.
Oh, man, there were so many hot particles in the air. Like, they were all over the West Coast. And we inhaled them, and we're all cooking. We're all slowly cooking.
Wow.
And, you know, they admitted, which we already knew, but there's still tons of radiation and radioactive water leaking out into the ocean. So it's been bleeding into the ocean now for, what, almost 3 years next March? Yeah. So it's...
Wow. That's freaky deaky, man.
It is. I used to eat a lot of seaweed, and I'm kind of like, well, most seaweed comes from that region. I don't think I'll eat this anymore. I'm paranoid, but
hey, man, paranoia serves you occasionally.
It can. It can be a drag, but no, it can help you out.
Yeah,
in certain situations, yeah.
Right?
Just don't go overboard.
Pratt, tell me about Pratt.
Yeah. So I scored their artist in residency.
First of all, what is Pratt?
It's an art school organization near Pratt Park here in Seattle. And they have printmaking, they have glass blowing studios, metalworking studios. They do drawing and painting classes, silkscreen classes for teenagers, for adults. It's really an incredible institution. And they just started an artist in residency program, which means I get to be there as much as I want this month, take all the classes for free. And it's insane. Well, I had to choose kind of which studio I was going to go into. And I decided for printmaking because I've never done any printmaking. Well, I did some silkscreening in high school, but that didn't really count. So now that I'm in there and doing, you know, etching and dry point, and monoprints and silk screening, and it's nuts. Yeah, the possibilities are really overwhelming. So I'm having a lot of fun. But
artists in residence, that's what art. You're the artist this month.
Yes,
and that's quite the honor.
It is. Oh, it's amazing. Yeah.
How do you get chosen for that? How do they choose you, Chris?
Yeah, they had an open call, and you just apply and submit like a selection of images and kind of explain what you plan to do there and what you expect to get out of it. And they chose two artists this year. I don't know how many submitted, but there was Piper O'Neill, I believe her name was. She was in May, and now I'm doing it in July. And I'm guessing they're going to do this each year now going forward.
Just for 2 months out of the year?
I think so. I think they're only going to do two a year, but they just started it, so
that's great.
Might change. But yeah, it's totally amazing. Yeah.
How do you market your art locally? Or do you kind of concentrate? It seems like you concentrate a little bit more nationally, like with getting your stuff out there. How do you do that? Do you try to appeal to the local people a lot? And I mean, do you go try to do portraits of bands aside from, like, I know you did my band, but like aside from that, do you try to get in with certain crowds here by doing that? How do you advertise locally for your art?
Well, I've had my website online, I think, since 2003. So that's
great. Been... website, bagpainter.com.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. I need to redo the entire thing because it's pretty clunky now since it's been, I just keep adding to it. But since I've had the online presence, that's been the greatest thing for me in marketing my work. That's how my gallery in San Francisco found me. That's how a gallery I worked with in Chicago found me.
So they found you.
They found me, exactly. I had submitted to some galleries really early on and never heard back. And then people started finding me, and the ball started rolling.
Yeah.
And now in Seattle, I've got a gallery that a woman had seen my work when I was with another gallery, a collective of artists. So I've just been going to the art walks for, 10, 12 years, and just know so many people in the art community now. That's really helped out. So I don't really market my work locally, because now that I'm with G. Gibson, she kind of promotes my work for me.
Okay.
But no, I used to just try to get shows wherever I could, coffee shops. And
do you still do that?
No. Now that I'm represented by Gail Gibson, I only show with G. Gibson exclusively. I've been in a couple group shows.
Okay.
But it's pretty much, she's the only person that can show my work in Washington State now. That's kind of usually the deal when you get representation.
So there clearly would be benefits from that. But let's say you couldn't just go show at the Central Cinema if you wanted to.
No. I'd have to ask her, and chances are she'd say no. But
okay.
I'd been showing here for, 10 years.
You've done all those avenues.
I was ready. And for the longest time, I didn't want representation because I didn't want to be limited. But I'm at the point now where, it's time and it's great. And
she has the connections, and she's going to get you into the proper, larger venues.
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, she's got a great location down in Pioneer Square in the TK building. Okay. And
So she just represents you here?
Yes.
Oh, in Seattle.
Yeah,
okay.
But no, that's cool because both her and Jack Fisher, my gallery in San Francisco, take me to other art fairs. So like Jack's taking me to Aqua Miami, which is part of the big Miami Beach Art Basel show.
I knew you had some shows in Florida. That's right.
Yeah, no, I've shown in a couple different galleries in Florida, but I've been in a couple of the art fairs there that happen. The biggest art fair in America happens every December in Miami Beach. Called Art Basel Miami, and the biggest one in the world, I guess, is Art Basel Switzerland. But Miami is a trip. We went there, I guess, in 2008 because I had some stuff down there, and it's hilarious. Yeah,
Miami.
Yeah, well, you got the Miami Beach people, but then you've got all these art tourists that show up from all around the world, and so it's this crazy mix of people, and it's just nonstop art and parties, and it's really, really wild.
As far as weather and culture, Miami seems to be the very, very opposite of Seattle.
Pretty much, yeah.
Would you find that? Yeah.
Yeah. I only spent a few days there, but I'm not big on Florida.
It's spicy.
It's very spicy.
Miami's spicy.
I like spice, but 4 days of it was good enough. I don't need to go back.
Right. That, so you've just, that's basically where you've gone is South Florida.
Just for that show.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
Okay.
No, I've been all over the world, but.
Oh, no, I know. I mean, you've been in Florida. Have you been to North Florida?
Well, we went to, where are the Blue Angels from? Whatever city that is. Pensacola Beach?
Yeah, they aren't from Jacksonville, are they? No.
No. And I had a friend in Jacksonville.
Because South Florida and North Florida are completely different.
I can imagine. I mean, I mean, California's two states, really.
And oh, yeah,
so Florida's
absolutely.
Probably, Florida's so huge. Yeah. Yeah. But no, I haven't. I've only been to Pensacola Beach and Miami Beach, so kind of the east and the west.
Okay.
Right? Is it on the west? I don't even know.
Oh, Pensacola.
Well, that's on the east side, isn't it? And then Miami's on the west side. No, sorry, the opposite. Pensacola's on the west side. Miami's on the east side.
I guess.
Yeah.
I think that's right. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, it was damn hot. That's for sure.
You know, I grew up in North Florida.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, I'm from St. Augustine.
Oh, I should stop talking shit about Florida this
year. No, it's fine. It's fine. You weren't really talking that much shit. But it's so funny. I lived there for a long time, from 5 to 20, and I never got really far out of St. Augustine. It's funny. Wow. I've been to the Keys in Miami since I've been back visiting, but when I was there, I just stayed. I stayed right there, so sure. I didn't get to know South Florida as much as I would have liked to have. Yeah.
Well, there's always time.
There is. Yeah. Hey, man, what does the future hold for Bag Painter? What do you have coming up?
Actually, nothing concrete lined up. I'm going to be having a show with G. Gibson probably this winter. Jack Fisher just moved. He got a new space, which I want to go check out in San Francisco. So I'll be showing with him early 2014. I just don't have a date for that yet.
And that's in Frisco?
Yes. Yeah.
So all these people they book exclusively for these cities that they reside in, and that's how you do it?
In their own gallery, yeah.
Oh, at their own gallery. Okay.
Yeah, they have their own spaces. Okay. But I've been working large scale recently. I started working on these yard waste bags. So they're 57 and a half inches by 41 and a half inches. So they're pretty massive.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Oh, they're great. Yeah. These.
Are you still doing just large portraits?
Yes. Yeah. I'm doing the large mug shots on them. I want to do probably some large pistols on those bags just because it'd be so huge and so bright.
Oh,
it'd
be
really crazy. And just kind of experimenting with that. Again, just doing the print work right now at Pratt, but I'll just dive into a whole new series of mugs as soon as that's over. Probably do another series from Florida. I kind of want to have a show. I have a bunch of imagery of car wrecks and stuff like that. I kind of wanted to have one called I'll Love You Till the Wheels Come Off.
Jesus.
And just with a bunch of wrecks and people that kind of sit. I have some weird pictures of a guy's like sitting in the road, and then you look and there's like a motorcycle like really far behind him, and they're kind of dazed and bloody. And
oh my God.
It'd be, I think, really incredible paintings, but really intense. Again, but a lot of my imagery is pretty intense. The mugshot people
are It's very intense. And the colors you use are very striking. How do you actually come up? Do you look at a picture and just get the, like, does it imprint on your brain? Like, oh, this is the color I need to use here. Are there certain colors you're drawn with? How do you choose? They're very vibrant. I mean, they're very beautiful.
Thank you.
Exciting.
Yeah, it's splashy. It's an ongoing experiment. I still haven't totally figured it out, but all I'll do is I'll look at the photo, and I'll just look at what the black is in the black and white photo and say, okay, what am I replacing black with?
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the image, I'll either like, it's got to be purple or it's got to be blue.
Okay.
And then I'll work up to the light from there. And I have little strips of bag that I paint little swatches on to see how they all look up against each other.
Yes.
But it's awesome because it's a great surprise. I never know what the image is going to look like until I drop that brightest color in. So I'll have four colors down, and there'll be all these bag blank holes on the face. And then I paint in the white or the yellow, whatever's maybe brightest, and it all comes together. Either it works or it doesn't work, but I don't know until that last moment. So it's fun because it's always different for me. I don't know what's going to happen, but I love using really bright reds with bright blues because you get that kind of visual vibration between it. Yeah. So I like using those together. I like using colors that pretty much clash. And
okay, that's cool.
Just straight out of the tube, so it's got to be pretty opaque. Because I was doing this portrait of Queen Elizabeth, and the guy, it was for a commission for a guy in Canada, and he wanted three of them in different color combinations. So I'm like, oh yeah, sure, I'll do that. And I started it out, and she has like the crown jewels on and these really elaborate earrings and this lace shirt.
Yeah.
And I think I only spent like one day on it, and I had to email him and say, can I get your phone number? And I called him up. I'm like, I cannot do three, and I can't do it for the price I quoted you. I apologize. It was kind of a mess. I mean, he was totally cool about it, but I felt so bad. Yeah. But it was such a difficult painting. Wow. And I was using white, and I had to use like three coats of the white, and this thing took forever. So I've learned kind of the
hard way. Did you finish it?
Oh, absolutely. No, I finished the one.
Okay.
And then I made him a deal. I actually scanned it in and then changed the colors in Photoshop and made him some high quality prints. So he still got three, but only one original. And, but he was totally excited. He loved it. So it worked out, luckily.
Now, you said occasionally you put on a color and it doesn't come together. When it ties the whole picture together, dude. And do you ever have to paint over that color?
I never have.
You have never. You go for it, and that's
it. Yeah, that's just it. It's done.
Interesting.
I signed it, and it's funny, too, because like some paintings I've thought, like, wow, this one's totally great, people don't buy. And then ones where I'm like, holy cow, I screwed that up, that sucks, sells right away. So I still don't know exactly my audience.
Isn't that funny?
It's very funny, but it's...
You would assume the artist or the musician or whoever,
I have bad taste, I guess,
would have the would have the greatest idea of what's great, but not necessarily, what would sell, rather.
Yeah,
but not necessarily.
No, I just don't know. I don't know. Yeah, and that's fine. Keeps it interesting.
Yeah. So where can people hear about you? I know your website, you have Facebook, you have Twitter, all that stuff.
I don't do Twitter.
You don't do Twitter?
I rarely am on Facebook. I mean, a lot of people use it for a lot of things, and that's great, you know, but I'm almost never on there. I will post shows on there, but my website's the main thing. I post what's going on every month on my homepage.
www.bagpainter.com. Well, cool, Chris. If you want to take the next minute or two, is there anything else that you'd like to hype yourself on? Any futuristic things coming up? Any other websites at all? Or?
Wow. Of my own? Well,
just tell people where they can find you. I guess that's it, just bagpainter.com.
Yeah, and I just got interviewed for a website, which I embarrassingly don't know the link to, but I'll have that on my website. I was just published in Hey magazine in France. That was really cool.
Now, did they find you, Hey magazine?
They did. They did. Yeah, I was actually even published, supposedly, in a magazine in China called Milk Magazine, and they promised to send me a copy, and they never did. But at least the folks at Hey were kind enough to send me two copies. That was very cool.
That's very cool. Now, do you feel like bag painting as an artist, do you feel like it fulfills you in every way? Or in most ways, in enough ways? Or do you feel like, you know, this is what I do, this is what I'm known for, so this is what I'm going to go with. But back when I did that crazy shit in college, that's really my shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, I do, but no, it's totally fulfilling. It's so fun. I really enjoy it. That's why I keep doing it.
There's no reservation. Okay, that's
cool.
Again,
I've taken breaks from the mugshots. I mean, I'm always going to paint mugshots. I took breaks, you know, when I did a Mushroom Cloud show and a gun show, but I just keep coming back to the mugs and the bags. I just love it. The feel of it, the look, it's just great. I mean, I might eventually get bored of it. I don't know.
But for now, it
works fine. I'd love to do oil painting. Because all my stuff, is just straight acrylic. I did oil painting in college and really loved the effects. And there's effects like Gerhard Richter is a German painter, amazing painter. And he's got a bunch of paintings where he kind of blurs it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a technique that he can do with the oil paint that I don't think I could do in acrylic. And it'd be fun to experiment with that. I don't know if I'd ever get good enough, proficient enough with oil to paint really well that way.
Is oil harder than acrylic?
Probably. I mean, it's...
Is it different somehow?
Oh, it's different. Yeah, the way you blend it, and you can like slow down the drying time. I mean, I guess there's additives you can put in acrylic paint to kind of get the same effect, but you have a lot more. You can like thin the things out and layer it, and I don't really understand it because I haven't done much of it, but it looks a lot of fun.
And then there's of course watercolor, which seems like a completely different beast. Is it?
Yeah. Well, you think you have to be retired and you have to be in a club to paint with watercolor. There's some restrictions there. No, I'm just kidding.
There is a stigma attached to watercolor?
No. I was just being facetious. It's a great medium. It's a lot of fun, and you can get really cool effects. Let's make it really transparent, put salt in it, do whatever. You can make it look really weird.
You can put salt in watercolor?
Yeah, if you put salt on a page with watercolor, the crystal reacts somehow, and it kind of makes these weird bleed type things. It reacts to it, and it's you know, fun and experimental. But I like using ink. I kind of use acrylic ink as watercolor sometimes, so the pieces look like watercolor, and those have been fun. So I've done some of those, but always go back to the bag.
The bag's great. You're right. Those colors leap off the page. I love looking at it, man.
Thanks.
You've done a couple record covers, haven't you, as well?
I have. Yeah, I've done, I do layout, I do graphic design, and I haven't painted a cover for a while. But people have used my paintings for album covers.
Yeah?
Yeah, that I painted your guys' portrait for your album.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. No, I do some graphic design, but I haven't done any for bands for a
while.
Did
that at the spine?
Yep, exactly.
As he walked in here, there was a CD, and it just so happened that he did the artwork for the CD laying
right here.
It's
At the Spine, First Day of Spring.
It's funny.
I did this for my friend Mike, yeah.
What a coincidence, right?
It's totally coincidence, so I hope they're playing.
Like, there's
this.
Literally 3,000 CDs in here, and there's one on the counter, and it happened to be your... The cover that
the
you
one
did.
It's got my, yep, it's even got my little credit right here.
that's
that is funny. It's a small world.
Well, Chris, it's been a joy having you here, man. We've been at this about an hour, which is about what I like to do.
Okay.
Yeah, anything else?
Break.
Yeah. Anything else to say to these fine people before you go, man?
Thank you for listening.
All right. That sums it up, folks. This is the Shit Show with J-Bo, Chris Kreitz, the Bag Painter. Go to bagpainter.com. You will.
Please and thank you.
Yeah. It's great stuff. It's great stuff. And commission him to do something that you'd like to see.
And have a wonderful day.
Have a wonderful day. We're going to play some music here. And Chris, you're welcome to hang out, dude.
Well, thank you so much.
As long as you like. What am I going to play here? Huh? Let me quit archiving this right now.